Attention, freelancers and solopreneurs. You are tuning into The Remote CEO, a show that will help you scale your business, become the authority in your market, grow into a better leader, and create your remote empire. And now, your host, acclaimed business coach and entrepreneur, Deniero B.
What's going on, CEOs? This is Deniero B, and you are listening to the Saturday interview episode of the Remote CEO Show. I always make sure to have the most interesting guests and ask them practical and actionable questions so that you can take that knowledge and scale your business with it. So if you do enjoy this podcast, I would love for you to leave a review on your podcast app. It only takes a couple of minutes and it will make a big difference. Now don't forget that we do release the 5-minute episodes every single day at around 6 a.m. Eastern time. So subscribe to the show and you will get bite-sized actionable content delivered for free to your device. Also, share this podcast with other fellow entrepreneurs, freelancers, and solopreneurs. You're on the rise, so it only makes sense that you share this journey with like-minded people. And don't forget that the more you talk about these topics with other people, the more you will understand them and make them part of your everyday life. And now, let's get started. What is going on, CEOs? Deniero B here with another episode of the Remote CEO Show. Today, I'm here with Michael Gasiorek. Michael runs Truth Cartel, which functions like a plug-and-play marketing department for emerging technology companies. They have worked with clients such as Algorand, Trust Token, Oracle, and EMX. He also runs Medium's largest crypto and blockchain publication. He's an entrepreneur in residence at NYC's D-Lab Blockchain Accelerator and mentor at world-leading biotech accelerator IndieBio, advising startups on marketing, sales, content, and media relations. Today's episode is going to be insane, so let's get right into it.
Thank you so much for being on the show today, Michael. Before we get to the business questions, can you tell us some more about your early life and how and when you decided to become an entrepreneur?
Yeah, sure. Thanks so much for having me on. And let's jump right in, right? So this is a winding road. I'm an Eastern European immigrant myself. And so when we got to the East Coast, it's a real time to have a chip on my shoulder and try to work through that. And so the early days of entrepreneurship really looked nothing more than selling bootleg video games to my friends in school and, you know, selling Magic the Gathering cards on the internet. So it wasn't anything glamorous. But we were a pretty poor family, and so we just kind of kept working from there. I spent a little bit of time in advertising, learning how to do the wrong thing really fast, spent some time in diplomacy, learning how to do the right thing kind of slow, and I was looking for something in the middle. So I eventually went to school for marketing, still not really sure where to take that with an international slant, and I ended up doing a startup weekend on my study abroad year. Great organization. They basically, you know, do a hackathon for non-technical folks, and you come away with, like, you know, your first startup. And yeah. So baby's first startup for me was, you know, at the time Liquid Social Mobile was all the rage. Now it's kind of crypto and DeFi and, you know, maybe AI. So I bought into the hype and I built, you know, my first little company around that, and we won second place and we just kept running with it. But I wouldn't say that's necessarily when I thought I would, like, you know, now be a CEO, especially not a remote CEO. It was when that company eventually raised money right after I graduated college and then crashed and burned to the ground.
Wow.
Yeah. Thankfully we're all in good terms with the investors and the co-founders and so on, but I could tell you that I wasn't really cut out for the job yet. You know, I really didn't have all my eggs in the same basket. And I hadn't really figured out kind of who I am as a leader and what it is I want to build. It would be years later, you know, working with really cool mentors, you know, spending time around really inspiring entrepreneurs, spending time in San Francisco, that I would kind of come to the terms of, like, yeah, I really want to be building something. I want to take control of my destiny. I want to, you know, still have the freedom of a lifestyle that allows me to be anywhere and kind of plan my own schedule. And that's kind of how my current company, Truth Cartel, was born. But I would certainly say it was a winding road, inclusive of, you know, before this company, I tried another one and that put me in 60 grand of debt. So, high highs, low lows. But on the outcome of that, on the kind of, like, shiny, you know, like light at the end of the tunnel, this company was born. So I'm just really lucky that it all kind of worked out the way it did.
For sure. And listen, I hope you don't mind me asking, but you landed on the East Coast, you said.
Yeah.
You were in the East Coast. What city were you where you actually landed? What when you arrived?
When we first arrived, there's this funny, terribly funny story of like my dad kind of earning below the poverty line because we didn't really adjust for living expenses when we first got the job, when we became Polish immigrants and kind of came here. So we're making like 30-something thousand dollars a year for a family of three, living in, frankly, kind of dingy Passaic. Passaic was the city that we started in.
Okay.
We eventually kind of, you know, worked our way up a little bit to Bergen County.
What
Bergen
state County is it in? Legit.
It's New Jersey. It's all New Jersey.
New Jersey. Okay, cool. Yeah.
Awesome. But New Jersey's got that kind of like gritty, you know, underdog mentality. So I like that suffused through me, you know?
No, for sure. It reminds me of Gary B's stories a bit. He talks about the very beginning. Sure. And now you're in San Francisco. So that's what I was saying. My question was, did you move to San Francisco during your studies and you decided to move there? Or did you move with your family or how did that happen?
Sure enough, kind of by accident, right? So many of the good things happen by accident in my life, to be honest with you. But when it came to figure out where I wanted to go next after I spent about 3.5 years in China on net. And that was, again, part of it was study abroad. Part of it was actually fell in love with the country and just try to understand it. It was so different from everything I knew here, right? European kid living in America, going to China, like what? and so I just kind of had to investigate it. And so I got that opportunity to get some funding for that company. That funding was actually based out of Shanghai. So I had to move to the big city. 22 million people or something like that. Just a crazy, cool, speedy culture. That's like three times New York. And, you know, we took a swing at bat. We really whiffed it. And then I had to think out, what am I going to do next? And so at the time, I already built a great relationship with this the founder of Startup Grind, Derek Anderson, who really continues to be a friend and mentor and just super like wise individual in my life. And he kept throwing this conference, Startup Grind Global, in February every year in San Francisco. And I made it my tradition to go. You know, that was basically the next place I landed after the company was shut down. I went to the conference. I knew my people were there. I knew my mentor was there. And he basically offered me a job to be the editor-in-chief. Later became the editor-in-chief there. Editor-in-chief of nothing to start, but eventually built something up. But it was kind of like an opportunity to stay here and to try again building something with someone that I really admired. But it really didn't happen intentionally. And I didn't really think of Silicon Valley as the place to, you know, build a business and where the future is and so on. But you know, I came for the like opportunities and friends and kind of big questions that I had, like how do I do the right thing and so on. And I stayed for the people. I made really good friends. I really fell in love with the culture. I found kind of more myself here. But now is also kind of the time when, you know, everything's shut down. The San Francisco is freaking shut down. And I'm thinking, where else can I go looking for myself, right? So I'm looking at, you know, Europe and other opportunities based on what travel restrictions are available.
For sure. And so the cool thing is that you're able to run, and my next question is actually about your marketing agency. So you're able to run your marketing agency. Are you 100% remote right now, or you still have some sort of like an office somewhere? How does that work?
No, I never did. Never did. How it worked is kind of funny. So again, I'm kind of coming off one company into the next one. And at the time I was running this kind of development agency with a friend. Suffice it to say, we just wasn't run well. You know, we really got in over our heads. Took on like too many contracts and you know, I wasn't really even aware what was going on in the business out here trying to make sales, spending a lot on corporate expenses to try to close those deals and conferences, and just dug myself into a financial hole. And then the company goes bust. So I'm over here just trying to take whatever jobs I can get. I've already been a good marketer at that point. I have a little bit of reputation. And some friends are kind of say, okay, like, okay, we have this cool opportunity for you to work here and like try this contract gig out and you know, one after another. And what started to happen pretty quickly is I got more and more contracting gigs and more of them were in the world of crypto. And again, I'm super interested in anything emerging tech, biotech, you know, crypto, AI. This is just like super up my alley. I got my SpaceX shirt on. So like, you know,
yeah, I'm in this noticed. Stuff. I was going to ask.
So I'm a big advocate for like, you know, the future tech that I think will take us somewhere interesting as a species. I really thought of crypto as the economic layer to like behavioral change. So it's like the financial stuff and the psychological stuff. And I was bought it. I drank the Kool-Aid and I took on a lot of deals. I took on a lot of deals really fast. And frankly, I got overwhelmed. So soon as I could, I like, who knows paid ads? Who knows email marketing? Who knows this? And I started building a little collective, you know, originally just a few folks in a Slack channel. And eventually I'm realizing, wait a minute, I need to pay these people. I don't want to be liable if something goes wrong. So we got to incorporate. I get very lucky finding the domain and then I can go through the whole concept. But the whole thing was always remote. And again, it started as a lucky accident. And now we're maybe about 26 or so people all around the world, mostly writers and marketers, some technologists and designers. As I learned in France, I had my stuff stolen. I had my entire bag of stuff stolen, my laptop, wow. Everything. I can actually run this agency from a phone. A few texts, a few calls, and it kind of does its job. I learned it the hard way. I don't recommend learning that way, but it is entirely remote and it's run by a phone.
That's the coolest thing ever, honestly. And that's why I've been advocating for the longest time now with the remote CEO show and the framework. You know, people still think that they need to invest thousands and thousands of dollars a month in office space and hiring people the old way. And then they wonder why their businesses crash and burn. I'm like, man, like you're taking on so much debt for no reason, so many liabilities for no reason. Listen, I want to switch gears for a second. I found an article of yours talking about how to build authority and influence people.
Sure.
Can you tell us more about that? And the reason why I'm asking is because part of the framework that my listeners and my coaching clients, you know, like learn is really like how to become someone in your industry. Can you really expand a bit on that? How do you do it? And
100%. Yeah. So it's kind of Truth Cartel has gone through many iterations, working in crypto and doing SEOs to doing, you know, post-launch and all this kind of stuff. What we're really kind of finding people want now is to get help building themselves as an authority, you know, as an industry figure. Because especially during the times of COVID when, you know, there's so little face-to-face, it's hard to like make good meetings and mingle. It's people are buying on authority. People are buying on your credibility, right? They're going for who's the number one in my industry who can get the thing done at the right price. Okay, if your name doesn't come up in my head, then how are you going to meet that person? How are you going to pitch them at the right place at the right time? So authorities is kind of this opportunity to kind of be everywhere at once and to be on the top of mind. And that's frankly how, you know, I'm realizing we've done all our sales. We've done zero outbound throughout our entire time running the company. Wow. You know, 3.5 years doing, you know, I think about $250,000 a year or so on average. It's, you know, frankly, a matter of authority. You know, we have good people who each bring in awesome deals, and it is only through that that we're able to survive. So now getting into what people can do, right? Real quick, I like to break the framework. And again, it's kind of a cheeky borrow from, you know, Robert Greene, 40 Laws of Power, you know, how to influence and influence people. Like I give my like props to the masters, and we've just distilled the tactics.
We repurpose whatever it's already existed. Of course, 100%. Cool.
So if we're going to try to go for the things that those guys claim, right? Affiliation, right? Credibility. If we're going to try to reverse engineer those models, how the heck do we do it from a marketing perspective? And we kind of broke it down to four things that you can most certainly either have us service. You can do it yourself. You can start at the bottom. You can start at the top. Number one is thought leadership. So get your original ideas out there and you know, promote them. Right? Because ultimately you're not going to get a lot of traction with other people's ideas unless you repackage them in interesting ways. You gotta like put something new out there. And that can be, you know, maybe you're in real estate or maybe you're a coach, maybe you're, you know, a sort of service provider, maybe you're a startup CEO. What's your unique take on reality? What's your unique take on COVID and how life's going to look around that? Everyone's got a unique, fresh angle, or otherwise you wouldn't be doing what you're doing. So try to get that out there. Number two is building your audience. Because frankly, you might have the best ideas, but unless you got people who are actually with you in that journey, and not just for that one article, but for all of your thoughts, because they're interested in what you think is an opinion leader, then you don't really have authority. You got lucky with a post. Mm-hmm. So how do you build that authority? Well, and how do you build that audience is you just got to be consistent. You got to pick a channel You got to stick to your lane and you got to keep delivering value in that lane. It can be email, it can be Twitter, it can be Medium, it can be, you know, Substack. You pick your poison, keep going down that lane, and you build the habit of interacting there. Mm-hmm. And then we got two more, and this does build chronologically. As you'll notice, it gets harder and harder to go up the stack here a little bit.
Yes.
The next one is going to be affiliation, which is basically building good connection with those people in your industry who are kind of already at the head, right? We're over here jamming on a podcast. We're making each other look good. But you do that at scale, right? You go speak at events on a panel with people you admire. You start giving talks. You appear in a podcast with folks. You just kind of make sure that you're rubbing shoulders with the right people. And you'll benefit from the halo effect of being around each other. And then you also hopefully hit it off. You know what I mean? Like, that's an opportunity for you to get now leads from each other, an opportunity for you guys to develop a friendship, for you to learn how they run their business. So it's key. And lastly, you have to have credibility, right? Accreditation. What does that look like in your industry? Maybe you're a startup mentor at an accelerator. Maybe you're in press, which is what we do a lot of. Maybe you're doing something like, you know, advising at a university, right? Whatever it is that's going to put you into that gated institutional, like, yeah, this guy's minted, they've done something that's hard to get, like an award, then that's going to credential you and put you way ahead of the pack. And it really does compound original ideas to an audience among your peer industry peers, and then credentialed with, you know, the institutional gatekeepers. It's a killer process, and anyone can do it, starting from getting their ideas out there.
For sure. So basically, to put this in a nutshell, you're talking about coming up with ideas that are yours, with ideas that are new, and ideas that are, you know, not exactly, as you said, that you can repackage ideas, of course, but you can't just copy someone. Then you want to be consistent and pick your lane. I really, really love this. I feel like nowadays, everybody's always in testing mode, right? Everybody's testing all different platforms, all different things. And then to kind of dilute their reach. And then you got to find the right people and have these masterminds. You want to be able to really like deal with people and rub shoulders. And then you want to get accreditation. So again, like getting other, like either businesses or even newspapers, magazines, and publications to talk about you. Super, super cool. Awesome. And listen, I wanted to ask you, you were working before, you interviewed a lot of people, all right? Let's put it this way.
Yeah,
you interviewed
sure enough,
a lot of people in the past. Yeah. I'm very curious, you know, I'm an interviewer myself. I always find golden nuggets. I always find golden nuggets with every single person I interview. Can you tell me a bit more about a couple of golden nuggets that you brought with you from your guests and how did they help you, how they helped you scale your businesses and get to where you are right now?
For sure. I think the biggest common pattern across every single person I interviewed on me, right? What was the lesson there? And I did this in Shenzhen, China for Startup Grind. I did it in San Francisco for Startup Grind. I did it in New York for another company, SOS Ventures. So I've done the different locations and this is consistent. You sit down with these people and they're smart. Don't get me wrong, but you're sitting with them and you're like, I can do that. You know, eventually you realize it's like looking at modern art. It's a lot of people who just stuck with it. They were gritty and just like applied themselves to some deep level of focus and just, you know, kind of tried to keep delivering value in a particular way for a super long amount of time. And it finally broke through. And now that's why they're in that seat, because they stuck with something long enough. And yes, timing plays a factor, luck plays a factor, but it just humbled me to the fact that we're not so different. You know, we're not so different. We're just kind of played our hands the way that, you know, we're in that kind of permutation. But I've sat down with billionaires. I've sat down with, you know, like big community organizers, with investors, with entrepreneurs. And that's the biggest one of all. It's that, like, ultimately, they're not so different. They're still human beings. They got 24 hours in the day. They're using their time in a particular way. They're using their time in a way that's focused. They're not getting distracted by a bunch of shiny things. They're, you know, actually committed to finding the best way to do the thing that they're really interested in doing. They're leveraging technology. They surround themselves with smart people. They take money from people that are either their customers or their investors, but are ultimately going to have the same vision in mind for what they're trying to do. And ultimately, they have a way of looking at the world where, you know, they're really just motivated to keep delivering on one thing. So focus is probably thing. Above all.
Yeah. I think as there's the beauty of working from home. Mm-hmm. I got a cat right there in the background.
Yes.
But I love forget that, about yeah. that. But in,
what's the but cat's in the meantime, name?
Nervo. The cat nice. Name is Nervo. I was gonna lock her in the other room, but I was like, you know what?
No way. Let's do it organic.
But listen, so I was gonna say, like, at the end of the day, what really interests me to understand is, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of people, they try a million different things mm-hmm. and they never go anywhere. But as you said, really, like, the golden nugget here is that if you stick to the one thing that you need to do, you're actually going to, like, if you stick to it for, yeah, exactly, 100%. I don't have it here. I have it in Toronto, but I have the same book too. And that's the thing. You know, they always say the main thing is to keep the main thing. Right. And if you keep on hammering
that. That's really good.
and if you keep on hammering on that nail over and over and over again for 10, 20, 30 years, you're going, that amount of work is going to compound. And it's always going to get easier and easier and easier. And that's the problem that a lot of people nowadays, they feel like they're okay with going to school and wasting, you know, five years or even more doing something they know already they're not going to use after they graduate. Yeah. But if you tell them, hey, like, quit and work on your business for a few years and you're going to see an amazing amount of success, they'll tell you, oh, that's crazy because I tried mm-hmm. once for 2 months.
Right.
And I didn't get the result. I started a podcast for 2 months and I didn't see the results.
Yeah, right.
Or I started a business and it didn't work out after 3 months and it quit and I went back to work. And honestly, most of these people, it's not like they love their full-time job. Let's be honest, Michael. They don't they don't like it anyway. So that's why I don't really understand. But at least let's put it this way. Our listeners, not right now, they've kind of, you know, they have quit that mentality. They're actually here to scale their business. Yep. And my question to you actually was about, you know, what's your future holding? What are your plans for the future, for the agency? Mm-hmm. What do you see yourself, your business in the next 10 years?
Yeah, it's a beautiful question. And it also makes me think, you know, when it comes to actually kind of taking control of your fate, both in, you know, my own future, but also to some of your listeners, there's this big transition that needs to happen when you go from things are happening to me, college is happening to me, my career is happening to me, you know, good things and bad like COVID are happening to me versus things are happening by me. I'm going to take direction and make decisions and sort of point myself in the way I want to go. And I'm going to grind in that direction until I either break through or I learn enough that I know it's not for me. Mm-hmm. And so where I'm at now is, you know, I've been spending a fair amount of time on the agency and I really have kind of come to have that run sort of on its own. And, you know, we're just spending more time, drink your own Kool-Aid. You know, spending more time with, you know, folks that we really admire, spending more time working with the press and just, you know, establishing ourselves as an authority so that more and more the company stands almost apart from me so I can go do other things and I can put great leadership in there and also promote the leadership that's already there so they can service the clients that we already have. And I can come in and do what I'm, you know, really good at, which is the strategy and some of the sales and some of the sort of this service design. Right. So more and more, I'm looking to put that company in the hand of its people. Yeah. And how I'm doing that is largely, you know, like Truth Cartel's over here and I'm over here and I'm really interested in a bunch of things. And we've talked about this a little bit off camera, but from biohacking to philosophy to you know, personal development, like I'm really interested in going that direction and I'm cultivating what there is in that field for me.
Go ahead.
Yeah, sure. I would say there's two other threads that I'm pulling on and kind of enjoying and kind of like educating myself about, which is one is around coaching education and understanding what might be there for me. And I admire what you're doing. You know, you've got a course now, you've got a community now that people really need, right? This the mindset that you're teaching people is like, I really want to investigate that. I really want to understand if there's any mindset that I can share with people and there's any other way I can educate others. So I'm still cultivating myself in that field and kind of understanding if there's a way that I can go from, you know, doer to educator. I'm really motivated by that. And the other thing is I also want to go from, you know, just putting time in and getting money out to really starting to invest. And so I spent a fair amount of time learning around, you know, investing in crypto, investing in stock market, investing in that kind of stuff. But now I'm looking to invest in assets. And so some of the money from the company, I'm now reinvesting in things that will, you know, earn passive income. And people always say stuff like passive income will come from your YouTube channel, your influencer promotions, all this kind of stuff, right? Something over 70% of millionaires each year in America are minted from real estate. So maybe follow the breadcrumbs. And so I'm very lucky that my mom and mom is like a big background in interior design, and she works with contractors on the East Coast. So we're going in it together. And those are kind of the two paths for me, developing wealth and really beginning to have that career work for me. And then also beginning to come enter this life of service and education that I'm trying to play with. And kind of understand what is there for me.
Awesome. You know what? When you mention about passive income from YouTube and the blogs and all that great stuff, and it is true and it works. Trust me, I know I'm working towards that as well, but it's not generational. Think about it. If you buy a bunch of properties right now and you play the right cards in the long run, you're going to pass them on to your offspring, like your offspring is going to pass it on to their family as well and to their kids and so on. A YouTube channel, I mean, it's great. First off though, you know, like sooner or later, things may change, you never know, right? And second of all, like, I don't think that my kids are going to, like, maybe they will keep on and be like, the remote CEO in 2050, there's gonna be my kids. Like, it'll be great, but it definitely is not a generational wealth building strategy. Right. And I do agree, my wife and I are in the same exact, direction, like owning property in Canada as well. And I think that's the best way really to secure that wealth. And like, to be completely honest, I don't think my wife and I would have been, you know, so sure of taking that step of saying, you know, we're leaving everything behind and relocate for an extended period of time if we didn't have, you know, that those properties, you know, backing up our move. Listen, let's talk about biohacking, about really like figuring out a way to live a more productive and a healthier life. It's one of the main pillars of the remote CEO framework that I teach my clients, and I definitely want to know more about it from you. So what are you doing right now that's working? And I want to ask you, what did you do that did not work and you would not recommend people? Because I know that in the biohacking world, there's a lot of stuff that
a lot of stuff there.
Yeah, wait. Yeah. So go ahead.
So just to set context for people, you know, we came from bigger means, and I, you know, when we were kind of a poor family on the East Coast, you know, New Jersey, you know, Eastern Europeans with a chip on my shoulder, like I got fat. I got fat. Yes. I got tired. I was lazy. Like, I'm hardly a pinnacle of human, you know, physique now, but I've really come a long way. But I came from pretty crappy place, you know. I mean, I'm now thankful for that time because it really, you know, I learned from that kid that's not how I want to be. So I'm grateful for what I learned there. I've integrated that, but ultimately, like, man, we started at rock bottom, you know. So. You know, one of the big things that I learned is it kind of all starts with diet. And it's really for two reasons. You know, physiques are built in the kitchen. And, you know, one of the things I realized is I actually had a really hard problem controlling my like carb intake, my grain intake, you know. So I would, you know, I was in college and, you know, I finally started to weightlift then. Still, you know, doing, you know, barbells and trying to figure that out and being an awkward kid, looking at what everybody else is doing. Everyone starts there. So, you know, the big thing to realize is like everyone starts at the bottom. But I was just plowing through, you know, boxes of cereal, just junk food. I had a bag of Chex Mix as dinner. Like, this is not a way to be. It wasn't dirty, bulky or anything. It was just like bulking in the wrong way. And I needed to follow a diet. I entered paleo about 9 years ago. I've been doing it ever since. Cut out dairy about 4 years ago. Now I'm trying a little more keto and just kind of playing with diets. But the reason why diets matter is not just because they're such a big player in how you feel on a given basis, how you look on a daily basis, but it's because they begin to cultivate your commitment. They're the one thing that then has a trickle-down effect on everything else you do. Once you've committed to your diet, you can start committing to your workouts and you can start committing to your supplementation regime. You can start committing yourself to your meditation practice, right? So the first thing I would say is it starts with diet. And for me, paleo's worked, but I recommend your viewers find whatever that works for them and just commit. you know, commit to about 60 days or something like that, 30 days, but really give it a run, you know. And it's not that you're going to binge before and after. It's that you run this diet and you're going to give it a try. You're going to keep trying to run it after. So that was number one for me. And then if I'm being honest, I've got, you know, I've done everything under the sun around supplementation. And I think one of the things I noticed is that there is a way of overdoing it, whether it's with caffeine or other supplements. And I've taken nootropics, you know, across the board. Favorite right now are like Nupept and Aniracetam. Not always easy to get in every country, but, you know, an interesting substance that's very, very deeply researched in Eastern Europe. But frankly, you are the sample size for this stuff, right? Yes. So I've taken a bunch of different supplements, probably the place for people to start. If you're having coffee, L-theanine, it's a green tea extract, is a beautiful place to start. But I'm not a doctor and I don't play one on the internet. So do you
understand? No, for sure. And again, I do want to make a disclaimer here. You're super right. We're not, you know, giving doctor's notes here to go and buy this stuff. I actually, I said it right now, like I take lion's mane every single morning. Oh, yeah. Okay.
I got some of that right here.
Yeah. And it works like amazing to me. Actually, if I take a bit too much right away, I know that I took a bit too much.
Totally.
And the thing is, you know, like you said it right though, because diet, general diet before supplementation is what, you know, it's your playing ground. It's basically what dictates how your day is going to go. I mean, like you can go and have two double Big Macs, large fries, and a Coke. It doesn't matter what you're going to have after, because you're still going to feel crappy. Maybe you're going to have some sort of energy, but that energy is A, not going to be the best type of energy that you could have. And second of all, you're going to have a crazy crash after.
Big time.
I listened to a lot of Tim Ferriss too, and he always says, you know, like some things work very, very well, but you have to also know like how you're going to feel after. Do you feel like that the effects of what you take after, the after effects are worth the ups or not? And if the answer is no, then stop taking it. Even if your days are going to be great during the day, if you can't sleep at night, it's definitely not going to make your day after very good. So exercise, like you're talking about exercise as well. Do you exercise regularly on a daily basis? Have you tried before and after, or like, have you tried not exercising and exercising? How do you feel?
For sure. The exercises that I used to do, you know, with gym access were definitely barbell exercises, a lot of powerlifting, and also spent a lot of time in martial arts, sort of, especially in my youth. That's how I cut the fat when I was a small kid, you know. Karate taught me not just discipline, but also got me really healthy. And then, you know, since then, I've tried everything from Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu to Krav Maga. And at this point, what exercise is largely either kettlebell workouts or bodyweight workouts. Right. And so kettlebells might be super popular right now. I mean, try to go find some on the internet. And at the time of recording, it's sold out everywhere. There's a very, very famous Eastern European man, Pavel, who will show you how to build a Soviet body with the kettlebell. And it actually, his workouts, Simple and Sinister, are my favorites. So 10 minutes, 10 kettlebell swings every minute on the minute. And that'll get you there. That will guarantee get you there.
So 10 kettlebell swings and then what? Like 10 kettlebell and then you take a break and then 10 kettlebell swings.
So you have 1 minute to complete 10 swings and you have 10 minutes of swings. So if it takes you a minute to do 10 swings, then you're going right into the next one. But on average, you know, healthy people, fit people are going to be doing a swing in about 30 to maybe 45 seconds. So you got that 15 second of rest. But take as long as you need, up to a minute, and then you go into the next one. And it's like, it's HIIT training, it's ballistic training with, you know, the curvature of your body, you're training your balance and your rooting in the ground. Amazing for lower back workouts, for your butt, your shoulders, your core, doing all the balancing. I mean, I miss the steel, you know, just like I miss the pure, like, you know, lizard brain rush of like moving large volumes of mass. Kettlebell swings have been my go-to ever since in terms of lockdown. I don't know where I'd be without the kettlebells. And ultimately, if it's not that, then it's HIIT workouts. You know, that's the classic New York Times 7-minute workout, still a classic for us to go through. And it'll just get your heart rate up to kind of like 80% of your sort of like your max in about seven minutes. And then you've really gotten yourself to you know, a place where your body's now starting to take care of itself. That heart rate is going to maintain for a while. It's going to get blood flowing. It's going to make you feel sort of healthier going down the line. So as far as like the minimum viable dose, if any of your listeners are looking for like, look, I got no space, I got no time, then the 7 minute workout is for them. It'll definitely get you started.
For sure. Super, super cool. I'm actually like thinking about, you were talking about Krav Maga too, and
heard
it's super crazy. That's basically intense, the Israeli like fighting
special forces kind of like
Yeah. I mean, how do you get into that? How was it?
Well, basically, I was in the like trying to find a career. I was like trying to find my martial art, and I just tried a bunch of things. And again, when I first got to San Francisco. Living poor, you know, so I was, you know, sleeping on couches, going to hostels, whatever, but I wanted to get my workouts in. So I, you know, try a free class here, a free class there. And I tried a free Krav Maga class and I'm like, oh my God, these guys are not messing around. You know, they teach you how to, you know, gouge eyes, you know, destroy testicles and rip ears off in class number one. But what's really impressive about the art is that the premise, it's, I think you'd be hard pressed to find like the philosophical Eastern, Eastern philosophy of like, you know, be Zen and in tune with your body and so on in Krav Maga. But you're definitely going to find effectiveness. This is like hyper effective. And you know, the entire thing, the entire premise of Krav Maga is do the most damage as quickly as possible as necessary to end the fight and then run.
Okay.
So then most, most engagements actually end with you turning your back to the person running, right? They don't end with you entering a nice pose and you know, kind of like engaging the combatant. They end with running away. And so it's a really interesting kind of like realistic training because ultimately most fights don't last over 10 seconds.
No,
you know, a few punches get thrown and folks are on the ground. And ultimately you don't want to be on the ground and you don't want to be in the fight. You want to get the hell out of there. And so they really do cultivate a very realistic practice. And I got really into that for a while.
That's super cool. Super cool. Michael, it was an awesome conversation. Where can people find you online?
Yeah, best places to look for me are going to be on truthcartel.com for my work. And then GasiorekM on Twitter, which is going to be GasiorekM on Twitter for all things, you know, philosophy and play and you know, thoughts.
That's amazing, man. Michael, it was an amazing conversation. I can't wait to have you back here. And
My pleasure, man.
I guess we'll talk soon, man.
Yeah, all the best. Thank you.
And this is it for today, CEOs. Thanks for staying with us until the end. Can I ask you a big favor? Can you please leave a review? I know the podcast app is not super straightforward. So if you don't know how to leave a review, just DM me on Instagram at DeNiroB. DeNiroB, and I will send you the direct link to the review section. And to show you my appreciation, I will answer any business question you ask me during that conversation. So thank you again, and I will talk to you again soon.